This is The Conversation, a podcast about contemporary art, sometimes other things, a hybrid of conversation, performance, and if necessary, interview. I'm Michael Shaw. Welcome, it's the etiquette episode, and the etiquette episode with Lizzie Post, no less. I'm grateful to have landed Lizzie Post to come on and answer your questions about art world etiquette. Lizzie Post is a direct descendant of Emily Post, who many of you may have heard of, and she's the great-great-granddaughter, and she's also an artist. So it's an all-around appropriate guest to have to be talking about art world etiquette. And I solicited questions from listeners, and we tackled many of them, mainly her, of course. And that said, I want to clarify that Lizzie made it clear to me that she is not an expert on the politics of the art world. And so I said, that's fine. I want to have you address these questions through your prism of etiquette expertise. And that's what we did. So if you find any of these answers or questions for that matter to be not to your satisfaction, feel free to weigh in via social media or via email. And maybe if you have something more interesting and insightful to say, we can do a little follow-up with a few of those contributions. Meanwhile, I enjoyed what Lizzie had to say, and I'm sure you will as well. I realized that rather than using etiquette as a way to talk about art, I think we ended up using art as a way to talk about etiquette. So in any case, it's going to be a great listen. The affiliate of The Conversation is a website called Los Angeles Art Resource. Get all of your artist needs met. Go to losangelesartresource.com. Otherwise, there is no sponsor for this episode. So if you would like to help the show, you can go to theconversationpod.com and make a donation. You can also go to iTunes and leave a great review, which will help other people find the podcast. And you can find all of those links at theconversationpod.com. Let's get to that conversation with Lizzie Post. Thank you very much for being here, and I will talk to you on the back end. All right, so Lizzie Post, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for coming on The Conversation.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I'm just going to sort of briefly describe your background, and we can get more into that for people who don't know. So you are a direct descendant of Emily Post. You're the great-granddaughter. And for people who don't know, Emily Post is basically, I don't know, I'm interested to hear how you would sort of casually describe her. But basically one way would be the godmother of etiquette, perhaps?
Oh, that's a new one. I kind of like that. It has a very, like, godfather appeal to it. A godmother of etiquette. We tend to say that she was really America's authority on etiquette from the 1920s to the 1960s when she passed away. And then the family, each generation, we've just carried it on since her passing. And we're now a fifth generation family business.
Right. Would you say that she either resurrected or sort of introduced the practice of etiquette into American culture?
Oh, no, it was already there. I think what she did was she made it accessible to everyone, and it's why her book was such a huge success, and it's why we're now into the 18th edition of it, is that it really, she really took sort of the dealings between people, the interactions that you have daily, and also the formalities within our culture, and was able to make them, present them in a way that was practical and accessible to all Americans. It wasn't just to her, you know, sort of elite friends and social circle. It was really for everybody. And the things that she didn't know, because, you know, she did have, you know, a maid and a cook and a butler and all these people, you know, she would practice throwing dinner parties without them so that she could figure out, okay, how am I as a host going to make people the most comfortable but still do everything I need to do? And I think that that's what made her such a huge success, was that she really cared about practicality and treating people with consideration, respect, and honesty. So I think she breathed kind of a level of normalcy into it and really put people at ease.
I wonder, in your mentioning her making people feel comfortable and also trying to host, or, you know, hosting without the staff. Did she at any point get into the process of weaning herself of the help, as it were?
I think she liked her help. I think like any of us, we probably would enjoy having someone who did, did the cleaning and the cooking and,
sure,
and some of the preparations for us. So
yeah, we're talking about large events. So it's the kind of thing where you have to have.
Yeah, well, even for smaller things, I think she just grew up in a world and came from a world where it was very normal to have staff like that.
Right.
And it was very normal to have rules. I mean, one of the funnier story, not funnier, but it just kind of, a quirk about her was that lunch was always exactly at 1.
Mm-hmm.
And when the clock chimed in the house 1, that tray needed to be, entering the room that she was in. And the maids would wait on the stairs until that chime was about to go off to enter the room. She's a very punctual woman.
Right. So would you consider yourself, among other things, an ambassador for the Post Institute?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's, I like that title too. We're having fun with titles today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Technically my title is that I'm an author and spokesperson for the Institute.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's what your card says, or your e-card,
yeah,
as it were.
My card says.
Right. Right. Right.
But yeah.
Got it.
I like ambassador. That's cute.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I heard you, and I'm sure you've made many appearances in various forms on NPR. That's where I heard you. And I thought,
sure,
this is one of the greatest voices in radio. How do I get her on my show?
So, oh, now you're just, I'm blushing. Thank you.
That's not a bad thing. Well, actually, no. I actually mean that. But at the same time, I wanted to use that as an etiquette test question, because,
oh, okay,
as great as lovely as compliments are, there is this, obviously, and this certainly happens in the art world, there's this level where you get to gushing. So,
yes.
Let's take my comment as an example. Did I cross the line into gushing?
No, you weren't gushing. You weren't gushing. If you had added another 3 or 4 things onto it, that definitely would have been gushing. But
right.
But one or two compliments to someone is usually enough, and then you want to back off, and you want to just, save it for another time when you can. And I know it's hard when you meet someone that you admire, and I know obviously in the art world that happens all the time. We're all inspired by those around us, and sometimes you're so into someone's work or what they've been producing, and you get a chance to talk with them for a minute, and you do kind of just start to gush, like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And and I think it's one of those moments that I think a lot of artists, I'm sure, are used to if their work is admired by a lot of people. And I think they, the best thing they can do is be gracious and just, accept the fact that someone is being very sweet and being very, complimentary of them. And, it's always a nice thing. So if someone does it to you, just, kind of say thank you and everything. But, you can always start asking them questions, because that'll get them to stop.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. And I think you actually just handled both sides of the equation, because I'm obviously typically on the praising side. And I think for all of us are, of course, on the praising side,
know,
at any level we are. At some
We're
point,
all fans.
At some point, exactly, we've all been fans. And in the art world, I think, where people can be so protective, and withholding, I think people learn eventually, artists learn, that the most they're going to say is, I like your work, or something like that, because they realize that if they start to gush more than that, it's really going to put the artist off. And, of course, there's this whole thing, this whole culture of, don't meet your idol because you're going to be disappointed once you meet them. I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, and I personally, I think, it's like, go for it, but go for it with realistic expectations, I certainly don't want anyone assuming that I'm so prim and proper or so stuck up or so, and it's funny how people do assume certain things about you just because of the work that you produce or what it is that you're involved with or known for. and you forget that there's a whole other person behind that side of them. You know, they could be extremely devoted to their family and their children, or, you know, like a lot of people don't know that I paint. They have no idea that that's a whole other side to my life that exists. And it's, you want to remember they're a whole person. And in my case, I'm really grateful whenever people kind of remember, like I feel bad for the person who thinks they need to be on point 24/7 around me, because I'm like, just relax. Right. I'll burp or swear or something just to get you to relax. Like, it's, you know,
well, yeah,
want people to be themselves.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sorry I didn't get around to bringing up the fact that you're an artist as well. And that's why it's particularly apropos, you know, to have you on, because you do have some of that insight and perspective. And I think to your point about you know, being relaxed around you, I think if people have heard you or had heard you on the dinner party, which you've been on.
Yeah,
exactly. That you are so kind of seem approachable and you know, and not intimidating
good.
On there that I don't think they would be. I mean, maybe they would be so, you know, impressed with your on mic entity and presence that they maybe are intimidated by that. But I mean, they would learn at least that you don't have something keeping you too firmly in place. You don't have something up your butt is basically what I was use a euphemism for.
No, shall we just say it? There's no stick up my ass.
Right. Thank you.
But yeah, no. It's I try really hard, and especially on the dinner party, because it is one of my favorite shows to do, and my cousin Daniel Post-Senning and I are on it every month. Is to just, it's my chance to be able to say, look, this is how I would handle that situation.
Yeah.
And I love getting to do that. And I love that Dan is also there to, you know, offer his perspective, because, you know, you get the male and female perspective. And I think I would hope that the listeners get from that, you know, everyone does have kind of a different take on it. And I think as long as you're considering the people around you and how your actions are going to be affecting them, that's what etiquette is really all about. And I like that you've got four people in that conversation who can all kind of say how they would do that. And it might be a little different, but the end result is usually that, you know, the people involved are being considered and being respected.
All right. Well, let's turn to our questions. Now, I have an interesting precursor to our art world related questions. And that is that, and this is perfect opportunity for you to demonstrate how your sphere of etiquette very much includes the digital world. And so one of the ways that I attempted to acquire questions was on Facebook. And that meant basically going on and saying, hey, I'm going to be speaking with an etiquette expert. And I would love to have your questions. You know, anything art world related particularly would be great. And I ended up doing that about 12 times, you know, over the course of maybe 2 weeks, something like that. And of course, I've heard from people, and you can certainly weigh in on this, that because, you know, you have this ongoing stream, certain people aren't going to see it. So if you put something up again, that's kind of okay. But at the same time, you know, being that most of the posts that I see, and I imagine that you see as well, are these sharing type things. You feel, or I certainly felt at a certain point very early on, like I was just trying to leech myself onto people and get stuff from them.
Like badger them for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that in this case, and it's not just because the questions would then be posed to me that I'm going to say this, but I think that in this case, when you're really looking to kind of rally people, that I think it's okay. And I think, you know, like you said, you did like about one a day or something like that. I think that's an okay reminder to be putting out there. And like you said, not everyone checks their Facebook every day. Not everyone checks their Twitter account every day. So I think, you know, putting that reminder out there is, in my opinion, it's perfectly okay. I think that if you're selling something to someone, that you want to reel it back a little bit, you don't want to over promote, you know, and so you want to take your time. And I think what you're doing when you're trying to solicit questions from people and get them involved in the conversation, give them a chance to be a part of it, that it's perfectly fine. I think your timing was probably perfect. But I agree. It feels weird on your end of it to be like, hey, guys, so I'm asking again.
Right, exactly. So Facebook people, you heard it here first. I did not overdo it. So
no,
even though it felt like
it.
On to the questions. So, okay, so here's the first one. And by the way, I'll just say that all the questions are anonymous, because, you know, the art world, you know, there's no reason that you would want to put out that, you know, you're the author of any of these questions, really. It's, it's better just to get the answer, I think. So, okay. So you become friends, or at least friendly, with a fellow artist. You like this person. You haven't seen their work. Then at some point you see their work, which you're not that crazy about. How do you approach this dynamic?
This is what we call you have to find the benevolent truth. You know, you have to find that little bit of honesty. What can you be positive about? And I do think you really want to try to steer away from generic comments like, "Oh, that's so unique,"
right?
Or "How very thoughtful." But I do think you want to head somewhat down that road in finding something. I mean, you know, I went to school and in all of my art classes, you know, you have to talk about someone's work, and you never wanted to be that person who was just like, "Wow, your work is terrible," you know, or like, "This is just an epic fail."
Right.
You know, you can't say that to your fellow student, and so you always had to find something, and I felt like that was actually great preparation for this exact scenario. So whether it's, you know, "I love your use of blue," or, you know, "Wow, this little spot here is just, you know, this is really precious or amazing or wonderful or dynamic," you know, whatever it is, find that thing that you can say that's a positive aspect of it.
Right.
And it's okay, especially in some friendships, to say, you know, "This isn't my cup of tea, but what I do really like about it is this."
Right.
Or I could really see, you know, you could say like, "Oh, I could so see this in this type of environment or in this type of setting or at this gallery," you know, that sort of thing, I think is important to try to find and give the person to go on, because you want to maintain the friendship. And that's where the etiquette comes in. You're looking at the situation saying, "Okay, I don't like the artwork, but I do like the person. So how do I make sure they feel supported, but I don't want to just flat out lie and say you're amazing," you know?
Right, right. Well said. I think my follow-up to that would be, being that young people and, you know, I guess to a certain extent, people who are not so young these days, you know, are as savvy as ever. And I wonder if bullshit detectors are as strong as they've ever been. But at the same time, on the flip side, I wonder if people are better at sort of picking out that element that they approve of in somebody else's work, and are such good actors about it that it's believable enough for that person with a strong bullshit detector.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that probably varies person to person.
Sure.
You know, it's. I think if you're sincere about what it is that you're finding that you like in something,
right,
then that sincerity is going to come through.
Right.
I think it's when you're struggling to find it, you know, and don't feel like you have to say something right away as soon as you see the piece. I mean, you know, look at it, really get invested in it for a minute. Give yourself the time to figure out what it is that you're drawn to or not drawn to about it.
Right.
And that's another avenue that you can go. You can talk about what you're experiencing as you look at the piece. You know, like, "Wow, it's making me feel really dark," you know, or "Wow, I just, when I'm around this, I get this really, you know, very light and airy feeling," like, you know, I think you can deliver it better than I just did.
Right. No, I think,
I think talk about what you're experiencing. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. I think your point about whatever it is that you say, you know, hopefully that's something that's at worst neutral, at best, you know, something positive, that as long as you are really sincere, that they're not going to be suspicious of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, nobody can judge you for what you experience when you look at a piece. I mean, no one can judge you for saying, I'm feeling this when I'm looking at this piece or when I'm in this room with this exhibit. You know?
Right, right.
That's a personal experience, and that's wonderful feedback for an artist. It might not be what they were expecting to hear. I mean, that was one thing that I always found interesting about listening to other people talk about my work, was they're like, oh my gosh, this totally reminds me of this time in my life, or it reminds me of this other piece I saw, or it reminds me of, you know, this place I've been to, or it's evoking this feeling in me. And that was always so interesting, because for me it could have been something totally different, and I think that's kind of what can make it interesting. So I definitely run the route of tell someone about what you're experiencing when you look at their work.
Got it. Okay, well said. Thank you. So these questions I think are going to get progressively more specific and art worldy, but you know, just to warn you and people. But here's the second one, which here's the second, which has quite a long lead in. So meeting people.
We'll see if I can remember it.
Okay. Meeting people, which some would cynically call schmoozing, is essential to success in the art world. No artist can succeed in isolation and without help. Naturally, this develops moments where one party definitely wants something from another party, and through social interaction tries to get what they want. This is not morally wrong or even offensive, but naturally some people are better than others at this skill and can do it without offending. What do you think the protocol of an exchange of this nature should be?
So this is nothing short of just business social. I mean, this is networking, and this is what you should be doing. And I agree that it can, I think it takes some getting used to. I remember when I first joined the Institute, you know, it was shortly after I graduated college, and my first book was coming out, and it took me a while of watching my PR director and, you know, also my father, who was one of the directors of the Institute. It took me a while of watching them do this, watching them connect with someone and talk about our business and what we do, and listen to someone talk about their business and what they do, and saying, you know, I really think there's something that we could do together, and finding the comfort zone in talking about that. And I think it is something that it comes with time, but it also comes with practice. So I think you need to get out there and do it. You know, when you meet a gallery owner or when you meet someone you want to collaborate with, I think what you mostly want to do is don't just jump right to how they can benefit you, but instead talk with them about who they are and what they do, and talk about who you are and what you do. Because remember, there's the other side of it, too. They need to want to work with you.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people get into trouble when they oversell themselves. But I think if you can just confidently, not arrogantly, but confidently discuss who you are and what you do and how you see a partnership between the two of you working, I think that, you know, as great a chance to be successful as anything. But you just, you know, you give them your card and say, you know, I'd love to talk more. And then personally, what I think the best thing to do is say, could I email you next week? Could I call you next week? You know, or whatever the date and time that's best for you is. But that way they're, you know, you have permission to be reaching out to them in that business sense.
And as an addendum to your answer, my instinct is to say that you should probably not necessarily plan on making that request upon first meeting, but rather earning it after maybe at least the second meeting or third. What do you think?
I think it depends. I think it depends on the nature of when you're meeting them. I would never discuss heavy business or anything right off the bat.
Right.
But I might say, you know, after that little exchange where you hear about what they do and they hear about what you do, that's when I would say, you know, I would love to call you to talk more about this or to talk more about how we might be able to work together. And I think that's an appropriate thing to say when you've had that meeting and you feel confident that this is someone you would like to learn more about or actually wind up working with. And then that next meeting, that next conversation, whether it's coffee or it's an actual, you know, in someone's office space, that's when you can be more direct about what you are thinking or how you do think you could work together. I would save the actual how you would make it happen for that second conversation, but I would get the ask in. I mean, you as an artist need to be out there selling yourself and making these connections, you know, unless you have an agent, you know, or dealer or something who's doing it for you. But you need to be proactive in driving your own career. So I think that it is appropriate when you meet someone that you think, you know, could benefit you, or that, you know, your businesses together could be beneficial to each other, that you make that connection and you find a way to schedule that time and just say, I would love to get in touch with you, you know, next week so that we could talk further. But leave it at that, talk further.
Right. And this, the place you're coming from is of mutual benefits as opposed to singular benefits.
Generally. I mean, there's always going to be that situation where at some point, you know, it's probably going to be benefiting you. But at the same time, you know, I mean, if it's a gallery or something, they're in the business of, you know, hosting and promoting artists and being the venue that then gets your work sold, gets it out there to the public. So they need artists to be able to do that with. So, you know, it is beneficial to them to be getting people, and it's beneficial to you to be being seen. So
right.
Usually it's mutually beneficial.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm just going to add another addendum to this, and this is be very conscientious about what kind of environment and circles you are making these transactions in, because, you know, in light of what you were just saying, a lot of galleries have a, you know, no submissions policy. So you really have to understand what environment you are working in.
That and you're actually operating.
Exactly.
In. Absolutely.
Exactly.
100%.
Right. And the subtext of the question and the answer is that maybe it's more of a studio visit, get somebody to the studio kind of thing that we're mm-hmm. talking about. But I think the way you answered it still applies.
Well, and I think one thing that we talk with people a lot about in our business etiquette seminars mm-hmm. is that you have to be a 24/7 professional. So you have to recognize that any situation can turn into a business opportunity. So even if you're at, and doing this delicately is the way to do it, you want to be representing yourself well, so that no matter where you are, whether you're at your niece's birthday party or you are, you know, someone's date to their business cocktail event, or you are, you know, at Starbucks, wherever you are, you know, that you are conducting yourself in a way that if someone around you winds up being one of those influential people or winds up being the gallery owner that you're planning on meeting next week, you're conducting yourself in a way that if they recognized you, they would appreciate who you were. And I think it's really important to remember that these opportunities, they might not be the exact place to start the conversation or to really get heavily into the conversation about how your work, you know, could benefit each other, but they are the types of places where that first meeting and that first impression can happen. And I think it is important to always be thinking about, you know, okay, this might be my niece's birthday party, but look at who, you know, my brother-in-law has invited, and I'm not going to bend this guy's ear about how he should have my work in his gallery, but I am going to talk to him about what a fan I am of his gallery or such and such, so that I can get the conversation rolling. And I can say, I'd love to come in and meet with you at some point, or whatever it is that's appropriate to the, you know, to the circumstance, like you said.
Right. Very sage advice, Lizzie. I think the part about 24/7, as exhausting as that sounds, I think
I know.
I think it applies.
And trust me, I have my moments where I'm like, we're off duty, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can eat with my hands? Okay, great.
Okay, so I think this third question reflects a little bit of the second, but it's a slight twist. So what should I do if I'm always the one who's giving? I go to people's openings, I give their work plugs, you know, maybe I give them studio visits. But when it comes time to give back, these friends and acquaintances seem to disappear.
So harsh reality here is, so are these people really your friends? Because I know which friends of mine are supportive and which friends I really consider more of fun acquaintances. Because of that, exactly what you're talking about. Who is really there for you at the end of the day? And I think that that makes a difference. If I start noticing that people aren't giving back to me, I look at, okay, is it just that they're not giving back to me in this same business sense. You know, they're not promoting my latest book, or they're not passing along that, you know, I was on this great podcast. you know, is it that kind of a thing, or are they someone that I shouldn't be having in my life because they don't give back in any way, shape, or form? Some folks are not going to, for their own reasons, they aren't going to promote your business ventures, you know, and in this case, it would be your art. I would hope that, you know, you have friends and supporters who do, but there are some people that just don't feel comfortable doing that. So you need to recognize, is this one of those types of people, or is this someone who just isn't giving back to me? And I would ask myself, how worth it is the friendship? How worth it is it to me to be a big supporter of this person? Maybe you pull back a little. You know, maybe you go to the gallery openings, but you're not putting it all over every social media thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's important for you to recognize that you are in control of those relationships.
Right, right.
And if they aren't feeling comfortable to you, either, you know, you need to say that to someone who's a really good friend. Like, you might say, hey, Jenny, you know, I really, it really hurt me that you didn't show up to this event, you know, that it was, I told you that it was something that was really important to me. It was really important that you would be there. And I know that you obviously have your own life going on, but I was really hoping that you would have come to that. And I hope you'll be able to make it to something in the future.
Right.
But that's when you have a really, really close friend
that right.
you feel comfortable confronting that way.
Exactly. And if it's acquaintance, you just realize that, you know, that's basically where things are going to stay.
Exactly.
So move on. Yeah, yeah. And to your earlier implication, Lizzie, next West Coast post-event seminar, you know, I'll be there. Just tell me where and when.
Okay, good.
Okay, so now we're getting into more of the nitty-gritty. So this is a contract question. So a big issue I have, and I'm sure a lot of other artists have, is contracts or lack of contracts and getting work returned and getting paid. In the art world, it's always so loose about how that works. I have galleries sign a contract that I send them, though galleries have a contract less than half the time, but it's always difficult and particularly awkward to try and enforce that contract. So what advice do you have on how to smooth out that dynamic? And I'll just say, lastly, that the questioner adds, my advice has always been to get a contract signed in case something goes wrong, but galleries always try to keep things so casual, as in, we're friends, you want a contract?
Yeah, and this is one I'm a little less familiar with, because I've never, even in casual like art hops that I've been associated with, I've never not had to sign something that says wherever that basically the space isn't liable if my work is stolen or mm-hmm. you know, if anything happens to it. But I think that. I mean, for me personally, I like the fact that this person is saying they always, you know, they do have galleries sign a contract that they send to them, and I think that's important to be proactive on that end of it to protect yourself and your work, or sometimes to recognize that you are giving up protection of your work.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone were to be saying to me, you know, we're friends and you want a contract, like, what the heck is that about? I'd say, look, this is just to protect myself, and it's something that I do no matter what. And if you don't want to sign it, that's okay. And then I would walk away and say, you know, no hard feelings. It's just I feel safer when I have that going on, when I have that in hand. And it's your work. At the end of the day, you have to protect it.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that you either walk away from it and maintain the friendship, or hopefully you explain to them why the contract is so important to you. And they'll respect that and just sign it. But I think it is important. Personally, I would never put my work up somewhere where I didn't have something either releasing, you know, the establishment from anything going on, but acknowledging that it's there, or, you know, protecting my work in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, great. Got it. Very good. So this one, I think, is right in your sweet spot. It's about correspondence and thank you notes. In regard to correspondence and thank you notes, when and how is it best to contact a dealer, museum, or anyone that an artist would like to have a dialogue with? And when and how is it best to follow up if you don't hear from them? When do you thank someone for a visit to one's studio, and how is it best to do so? And this person writes, I am still a fan of handwritten notes, and I've always found the object of a letter to be appealing, considered, and of sincerity in just the form itself, let alone the content of that note. Now, I'm going to add an addendum to this, which is going to bias you, but I would suggest that most dealers, curators, and other art professionals would probably find this, in many circumstances, a little too contrived and maybe desperate.
Okay. That's good to know.
because, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, going to somebody's dinner party and having, you know, a really tremendous party thrown for
them. No, you're not, talking about building good business relationships. And
sure.
I will say that mm-hmm. in general, we do advise that you write a thank you note either upon completion of business. You know, for instance, if I've worked with a producer on a really great segment, I'll often write them a thank you note and say, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be on the show and to be working with you. Hope we can do it again sometime soon. And I am an author and spokesperson for an etiquette company, so
right.
It does matter. You know, people are a little bit expecting a thank you note, and even if they're not expecting it, they see it and they're like, oh, well, she's an etiquette expert. Of course she would write a thank you note. So I kind of get off the hook on the contrived part of it.
Right.
but I do think that, you know, I personally think that it is appropriate to be sending a thank you note upon completion of business with someone. So whether that's someone who's purchased your work or, you know, whether that is a gallery that's hosted you, I think that it is a nice and considerate and thoughtful thing to do. And I don't think it can hurt you in any way. I'm going to say to those who think that it is contrived or inappropriate that, you know, really, it's you don't appreciate being thanked. Come on.
No,
like,
I
that jaded about stuff.
I think that point is absolutely fine and it makes sense. But what I'm thinking about, for example, is a studio visit. Let's say.
That might be a bit much.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, if there's
we'll say that thank you note. You don't have to do thank you notes for every single thing
right.
that happens in your life.
Right.
You know,
right?
But if you truly did enjoy it, or if you wanted to let them know an afterthought, something that you thought of later on, you know, I mean, obviously a phone call could work too if you're in contact with the person that way. But you know, it's. You just can't ever say that it's wrong to get a note like that from someone. You know, I think where it might start to feel contrived is if the gushing kicked in. And if the note was basically like a love letter about how amazing it is, you're like, wow, you stopped by my studio for 5 minutes. This is a little awkward. But at the same time, you know, someone is just trying to let you know that they appreciated what you did for them.
Right. Good call back there. Yeah, excellent point. Okay, so these next two, I'm just going to kind of bunch them together because they're extremely specific, and they may be out of your comfort zone. But I've been
my jurisdiction.
Your jurisdiction, okay. Well said. Yeah, but I'm interested to hear how you respond to them. So, here's the first one. I'm just going to ask them one on top of the other. Is it okay to ask your dealer exactly how they are funded? And then the second one, which came from a dealer, by the way, on poaching.
Okay.
AKA stealing a client. That this is how I'm phrasing it. So what should the gallery who is poaching an artist from another gallery say to the dealer who is losing the artist?
Nothing. I'm guessing nothing.
I
wouldn't say, like, what do you want to say? Hey, Jim, really sorry that we got Carrie, but her work's just so fantastic. I couldn't let you have her. Like, no, I think you don't say, it's just, the closest thing I can say is, yeah, no. I don't think you reach out to that gallery that's losing the artist and say, tough luck, you know. Like what I'm curious, what do you think might be the appropriate thing to say?
Well, I guess what you're implying is that in that circumstance it's the professional implication that, you know, it's Darwinism and we survived and in this round and you know, this is business. So there's, you know, if I being the poaching dealer were to say anything, that would just be pouring salt in the wound.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's the way that I would view it. I also, you know, to an artist who's allowing the poaching to go on, you know, you really want to watch it. If you get a reputation for letting that happen, you know, you can really become somebody that people aren't going to want to work with. So I do say that it's important to be honest and fair in your business dealings. But we're starting to clip a little into the morality realm here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So, and then the one about asking a deal, you know, so this falls under the category of maybe advancing or crossing the boundaries, asking your dealer how they are funded. Yeah. Simple as that.
That's right. Into, you know, there are like four things that we don't talk about at the dinner table, and that's money, religion, sex, and politics.
Right.
And there's a reason for it. It's none of your business how your dealer's funded. In fact, you might not want to know in some cases, but I think it's truthfully none of your business where someone's money's coming from. I would just know that's how we talk about things on a social level.
Right.
But in the business world, if you're truly concerned about where someone's funds are coming from and that it will have a negative effect on you at some point, that's the kind of thing where I would advise somebody to then back away if you're that concerned about it. You know, I think that when it comes to questioning or assuming where somebody's funds are coming from, that on the one hand, if they don't straight up just announce where the funds are coming from, they are going to be, you know, putting themselves in the line of gossip, and people are probably going to be talking about it. But at the same time, gossip is something that is inappropriate in the business world. You know, it happens, obviously, just like it happens in social circles, but it's inappropriate for the reason that it's usually harmful. And you have no idea where this money that these dealers or these galleries have are coming from, and it truthfully isn't your business. I mean, whether it's someone's inheritance from a past relative or whether it's a gift from someone, or, you know, it's because they worked a lemonade stand from the age of 7 until 21. Like, it doesn't really matter. And it really isn't anyone else's business. So I think as an artist, as long as you're confident that they're going to get the job done, you shouldn't be asking anything about how they're being able to be funded.
Great. Beautifully put. All right. Well, let's make this one our last one, because I'm sure we have about four more, but I think one is plenty. So referrals. It is my belief that artists should earn a referral. This is kind of an awkward way to put this, I think, but I think the point is still going to be clear. When does an artist ask another artist for a referral to someone who can help their career, and should they even ask them in the first place? So just to contextualize this a bit, this kind of goes back to, you know, one of the earlier questions about, you know, essentially asking, trying to get something from somebody. This is more in the artist on artist category as opposed to artist on dealer or curator category. But I guess is it essentially the same question?
It's a really similar question. I think that that it also kind of goes back to the question of you know, I have a friend and I've now finally seen their work and I don't like it. And I think that that's something that's really important when it comes to a referral. When you're going to ask someone, you really want to make sure that they're a believer in your work. Just the same way that, you know, as an intern or as a colleague, you want to make sure that when you say, hey, could you give me a referral, that you're asking someone who would give you a good referral.
Right.
You know, and I think it's important to really have a lot of trust in that person. So I wouldn't just be asking anybody for a referral. I like the fact that you've said that, you know, you should earn a referral. I obviously know how that works in the business world. I think in the art world, it's slightly different, that, you know, you really want to make sure that the person appreciates your work and that, you know, you've spent enough time together that they'd be willing to support you in that way.
Yeah, and I think
someone came to your gallery and saw your work and liked it, that, you know, I'm not just going to straight up ask them for a referral. I would want it to be someone who's seen me work, who knows me, who trusts me, who's really appreciative of my work, and we've spent a significant amount of time together.
Right. Yeah. So we're talking about a certain amount of familiarity and trust rather than
Absolutely.
Kind of a colder type of approach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been great, Lizzie. I want to close maybe, but this is something that I didn't think to mention to you before, but I wonder, now that we've gone through these questions, if it's made you think of any questions that you would like to ask, and maybe you can, and maybe you can answer it yourself, or maybe I can try to answer it.
The one question, and this I love asking this of anyone who's kind of within the art community, because, you know, when you're in school for art, the one thing that you're never allowed to say in critique is you know, oh yeah, I like it. And I want your perspective on when someone says about your work, or you know, maybe you can even give me perspective of other people's, what do you like to hear when someone is going to praise your work? What are the types of things that you really appreciate hearing?
Right. Well, I'll answer by saying that I had a studio visit. The person said at one point, it was a fine studio visit all in all, but at one point the person said, I like your work, you know, kind of near the end. And that to me felt pretty generic and kind of a little bit bullshitty. It wasn't gushy, but it, you know, it felt like they were just trying to sort of not make things awkward. So there's that situation. But as far as things that I would really love to hear, I mean, I would obviously love to hear what I would give in praise of something, which is something along the lines of, oh man, your stuff is so fucking great. You know, something like that. I mean, when you say that, you know, that there's no bullshit about that. Something that happened not too long ago that I think was really cool is that somebody was over at my house when I wasn't here, and I was told by my girlfriend that this person was just kind of staring at this piece of mine. And, mm-hmm. you know, for a while, and kind of lost it and not saying anything. And
nice.
And when she said, you know, this is actually by, you know, the person just almost didn't even, they didn't even blink. So I think that that's sort of invisible kind of praise is another form, I guess.
That was a good one, yeah.
What do you like to hear?
My personal one. Yeah, what I want to hear is, I really want that on my wall.
That's a great one.
I want to hear the person say they want to live with my work.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one.
That's the ultimate. I'm like, if you say that you like it enough that you want to see it every day, or
right.
you know, every other day, or you want your friends to be seeing it, that to me, that's the ultimate praise right there.
Absolutely. Lizzie, this has been fantastic, and I think you've met, if not exceeded, my expectations. So thank you so much for coming
on.
Oh,
thank you. I'm very glad of that. No, it's been a pleasure. I love getting a chance to talk a little bit of this side of my life, so it's nice.
Great. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, so there you have it. That was pretty good, huh? Not quite what you expected, but I bet you found it pretty interesting and maybe even useful, right? Thank you very much again, Lizzie Post, for lending your etiquette expertise to the conversation. If you would like to hear more of Lizzie in her more traditional venue, which is the dinner party, you can find her there once a month, several NPR stations, and of course, podcasting. That's the dinner party download. If you like this show, please tell your friends and colleagues about it. Find all the past episodes via theconversationpod.com, social media support, donation support, iTunes, etc. I appreciate it in advance, and we do have another Conversation 3-Way coming up in a couple weeks, right after Thanksgiving break. Stay tuned for that. Thank you very much again for listening. I will talk to you soon.